Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer, and I got my co-host, Dr. Carl, my brother, greatest endocrinologist alive. Unless we have another endocrinologist on here. Our special guest today, he's coming back. It's Dr. Stuart Phillips. You may remember him because we had a podcast we were supposed to have with him, and then we joked about him. Anyway, we actually laughed about it. It was a scheduling issue, but he is back.
But he did our original Protein 101.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. There was another one we were going to do. I don't even remember. Probably about protein.
There's Protein 201.
Yeah, 201. The next level. But this one more timely because the American College of Sports Medicine came out with a position stand on resistance training prescription for muscle function, hypertrophy, physical performance, and healthy adults. And
he's the senior author.
You're the senior author on this thing. Yeah. Absolutely. It's really cool. So
if there was ever a guideline that needed to be talked about on the Docs Who Lift podcast, it's this one. And we love the basic conclusions that you've been talking about. I got some
appreciate that.
So let's crank it out. Let's tell people how important it is to lift some weights and the basics of it.
How important. I mean, I think that, you know, I've got a lot of people asking for interviews, and they're like, why did you have to update this? And I said, well, you know, the last one was published in 2009. So, you know, that's 17 years. And all you have to do is type resistance training and human, and look at the number of articles published since 2009. So I'm like, the evidence base has grown immensely. And so it was time to update it, mainly because the science has come forward, and a few things that were seemingly important in 2009 appear to be just as important now, no question, but a few other things maybe not as important. But we've also learned a lot more about resistance training. You know, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, and I've said it, like, if Ken Cooper only lifted weights instead of, you know, he was a runner and invented aerobics, he was a weightlifter, we'd know a lot more about weightlifting. But, you know, we're the catch-up form of exercise as opposed to aerobic exercise. So
as far as the science, right?
But No. I mean, I'm preaching the converted as far as, you know, what we should be doing. But yeah, certainly as far as the science, where it's nowhere near as well developed as the science of what aerobic training does for you, for sure.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but another reason I think that was important to do this, despite some people going, well, what's so new, is that those since 2009, which I can't believe it's been that long, the social media misinformation, et cetera, out there has exploded to the point of everyone's trying to sell something different. And my little quote that I've been trying to push, I think fits this right away, is that, you know, I try to tell everyone in my world, especially in my clinic, that consistency is more important than the complexity. And it always ends up going back to a lot of the fundamentals. So sometimes it's really important, I think, to go through all the evidence, all the science, and say, well, all these crazy things that you're hearing about out there, maybe they're not, you know, whatever. So I think that, to me, that's important too.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I mean, I think, to your point, social media has created a platform for a lot of people, and it's great for that. And at the same time, it can be great for people platforming ideas that, you know, when you check, you're like, I'm not getting a good feeling about that. Or like, you know, that is just flat out wrong. You know, I see both of you on social media on a daily basis.
That's exhausting.
You know, you could spend your whole time debunking stuff, right? So, terrible. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just need evidence behind the statements that people make. And, you know, that was the one thing when I went to the committee at ACSM and I said, you know, it's time to redo this. Like, come on, like, it's been long enough. And they said, yeah. And I said, but it's going to be done systematically. And we're going to have to search and we're going to have to use up-to-date methods so that we get a true evidence-based answer to the questions. I mean, you know, if you guys talk about, like, if, you know, I've said it before, we're here at McMaster University, so I have to say evidence-based something, you know, and the systematic search is the way to do that. And, you know, a lot of people poo-poo it, but you can talk opinions and that's fine, but, or you can talk evidence and, you know, you guys understand that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's how you combat some of this. People make very strong claims when you could make strong claims about another modality. I'd love to hear kind of how you went. You had 137 systematic reviews with over 30,000 participants.
Yeah.
And kind of went through this. How did that work?
Yeah, I mean, so there's two ways you can do this. You can do a study by study meta-analysis, so you get down to the individual study level, or you can do an overview of systematic reviews with the idea that the systematic review represents the pinnacle of the evidence. So now we're looking at the evidence of the evidence, if you like. But we're evaluating the quality of the evidence that's generated by the the syntheses of the evidence. And, you know, there's redundancy there. Some studies appear in multiple systematic reviews. And on the case of strength, which was the one thing that was, you know, most common to all of the studies, we did a sort of a sub-analysis to kind of measure that degree of overlap. It's not huge, but it is there. And that can bias answers. So if you've got lots of one type of study that, you know, skews the answer in one direction or another, but, you know, on average, as you'd expect, and nobody was impressed with, and, you know, that everybody knows the answer to, and I get it, like loud and clear, you know, lifting weights makes you stronger. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what weight you lift or resistance bands or anything. They all work. And then the question becomes, what works better? Mm-hmm. And that's the granularity of some of the sort of prescriptiveness that's in the stand. And we talk about frequency and we talk about load and we talk about development of power. But one thing that we did want to do, which we thought was important, was to in 2009, the stand focused really on development of strength for sort of, you know, moderately trained, like people who were training. And that was where the literature at that time was pretty well developed. Now, you know, you guys are living examples. We're talking about prescription of resistance exercise to all kinds of populations. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to relate it to function as well. And I thought that was a really important piece to add in there. So just some real measure, real world functional measures that, you know, are commonly used in the lab, at least to show people get better at doing certain activities that would translate into, you know, better quality of life, better mobility, et cetera.
Yeah. That reminds me, Spencer, of the thing you used to post about, because we used to get in, not arguments or debates, but, you know, even like Brad Schoenfeld and these guys, and he made this picture and it was us flexing. And of course it was outside. I'm like 30 years old. We're really lean. It's like, we're sweaty. We got the pump. Everyone thought we were on steroids, which we never have been. But he said, right, while you guys were debating lifting, we were just actually lifting.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, so it kind of comes down to that, because that's just all we've, yeah, that's all I've done, yeah, since I was 6 years old. And that's, yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's always been very fundamental basics that my dad taught me when I was, and my Hulk Hogan workout set when I was 6 years old. And that's it.
Yeah. The Hulkster. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Well, tell us.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Brad is, you know, is another guy that I, you know, I have tremendous admiration for him, and he's done a lot of work. And even he falls back and says, you know, if you look at it on sort of a public health level, and this is one of the things that I think a lot of people forget, it's a self-report, and as accurate as that is, and, you know, as pleasant a picture as everybody wants to portray of themselves, says that 30% of people self-report adhering to the strengthening guidelines. Now, remember, the guidelines say 2 days a week of strengthening activities. Mm-hmm. If you look at the CDC questionnaire, gardening is listed as a strengthening activity.
Oh, my God. Really? That, I did not know that.
Yeah. So flat out, I just want to say,
okay,
gardening is a an amazing leisure time activity. If you like it, fill your boots, like have at it. But it's not really a strengthening activity, right?
No, it's not.
And in the UK, strengthening activities include walking. And I'm like, that's just so the first it's self-report, second it's misclassifying activities that are actually strengthening per se. And it's not what the three of us, and if we had Brad in here, would call a you know, a strengthening activity. And you know, there are other activities which I could probably agree. So Pilates and yoga, and I know I'm going to take heat for this, but you do get stronger, but at a certain point, you can't get much stronger than your own body weight. You can challenge your balance. And certainly it's not that it's an easy workout. It can be very difficult, but you know, you're only as strong as you holding up your own body weight. Whereas if you add external weights, you know, clearly you can go above your own body weight, right? Yeah. So, you know, there's different activities that count in there, but the traditional, like go in the gym, lift some weights or do a body weight workout, you know, those are the type of activities that are, to my mind, you know, what we're talking about.
Very cool. I want to hear about like the top, I think you had like, what, a top 10 or something? Top 10 things that like we should take away from this?
Yeah, I don't know if I can remember 10. There's probably about five that I
I might be making that up.
No. I mean, you know, if it comes down to it, right, and we're talking about getting stronger, you got to lift heavy things. I mean, you know, we've taken a lot of heat over the years for promoting lighter weights. And what we're really talking about is if we go the sort of strength endurance continuum. So, you know, down here is the heavy weights and that's sort of 2 to 3 reps, you know, that sort of thing. And then up here is the lighter weights and maybe that's 20, 25 repetitions. And then there used to be this sweet spot in the middle for hypertrophy between, you know, 8 to 12. And it said outside of that, hypertrophy doesn't happen. And I'm like, yeah, it does. But you've got to get close to fatigue. You don't have to go to absolute fatigue and absolute failure, but you got to get close. And so all that we've done is sort of expanded that range in which hypertrophy now occurs. But if you want to get stronger, you've got to practice. And strength is a, you know, it's coordination as much as, you know, your brain talking to motor units, your motor units firing, and you lifting that weight. That's a learned activity. So, you know, if you want to lift a heavy weight, then lift heavy things, you know, and that's true in 2009. And it's still the same in 2026.
Hasn't changed.
No. But the range in which hypertrophy occurs is much broader.
Yeah.
Everybody still goes, oh, I like 8 to 10 though. And I'm like, yeah, so do I. I'm not saying lift light all the time or lift heavy all the time. I mean, I'm just saying that the prescriptive range is broader than we thought. Let's put it that way.
So to clarify, if you wanted a heavier max, you're going to have to go with heavier weights that are fewer reps. But you can get stronger in that higher rep range, lighter weights, but you may not translate as well to lifting the heavier weight.
You get bigger muscles. So the hypertrophy series is talking about muscles.
But you'll get stronger in that range, just not strong to lift an increased max
Absolutely. Let's be clear, you know, and again, it's sort of, so here's the range, here's the real heavy stuff, and here's the lighter stuff. You know, these folks down here, you know, if they're lifting a weight 2, 3, 4 times, they're probably at between, you know, sort of 85%+ of their 1RM. So they're only 15% of away from the test that you're using to assess strength. So they're almost getting to practice it like every day, every time they lift. They're very close to the practice test. So they get better doing the test because they're always close to it. If you're lifting up at the lighter end of the range, you don't get you still gain muscle, and it's not like it's useless muscle. A lot of people say, oh, it's sarcoplasmic hypertrophy up there. And if that exists, in other words, you don't grow strength producing myofibrillar proteins, sarcoplasmic hypertrophy is a tiny proportion I like, if it exists, it's a transient phenomenon. Let's put it that way. But you don't get as strong because you don't practice lifting as strong. Mm-hmm. If you're lifting in the 15 to 20 rep range, you're probably 60% away from your 1 RM. And then everybody goes, but I want to be strong. And I'm like, then you better lift heavy weights. We're talking about, you know, 70%+ of people who don't do any strength work at all. You know, so what's more important? You know, you're down in this range of people that does it and does it regularly, and you want to tweak the variables in your program. I'm like, you're an experienced trainee. The stand admits flat out, if people read it, it says there are advanced training methods that are not discussed here that are more appropriate for advanced trainees. It would be like, you know, it's good to bounce a basketball to learn how to play basketball. And but then there's some other stuff that you've got to know how to do too, you know? Yeah. I'm being trite a little bit there, obviously. It's aimed a lot more at trying to show people really just how simple resistance training can be, because I think, and you know, it's second nature to us because we grew up in the weight room, quote unquote, but for a lot of people, if you say exercise, they'll go for a walk because it's easy to do. Open your door and you go.
Which is great.
If you say go, yeah. And you say go lift weights, they're like, oh,
yeah.
I don't know. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Machines?
That's why this is so important for our patients. I think this is perfect. This is exactly right.
So then what's the next point? I mean, you're going to probably get into the type of bands, machines, barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, all these different things.
Yeah, you know, I think the finer gradation of, you know, sort of task specificity. So if you want to do an Olympic lift, you're not going to train with, you know, bands or, you know, some small barbells, right? But I'll say a person's name, and not like I'm endorsing, but I'm super... She does a great job. Her name's Shira Coulomb, and she actually lives not far from here. She's got over close to 500,000 followers on Instagram. She coaches women all the time, and all she uses is a small set of dumbbells. Nice. Wow. And the reason she does that is because she wants to lower barriers to entry for women who maybe don't want to go to the gym, don't have time to go to the gym. And so they work out at home, and like, go to Cheryl's page and look at some of the changes that these women, and it's predominantly, it's not that it's not only women, but it's pretty impressive, right? And you know, I'm not saying that you'd win any powerlifting competitions lifting that way, but these women have changed their physique. They've definitely changed how strong they are. And, you know, the self-report is that they certainly change how they feel and their confidence as well. And so, you know, check. You know.
And maybe more importantly, I guess, from my perspective, our perspective for our patients, it's literally what's on the inside that counts. I guarantee their health is through the roof better. And that's part of the thing, is getting people to do this. And that would be, maybe we can ask her if she minds us tagging her in this, because, you know, I'm always looking for anything for my patient.
I don't think she'd mind. No, I don't think she'd mind. She's a pretty humble person. I invited her into my office and I said, you know, we've got to chat because I'm super impressed with what you do. Tell me a little bit about your story. She said, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm doing this thing and there's somebody who helps me and everything. And I was like, you're about as humble as it comes. You know, she's gonna hear this and go, why did you say something? But I mean there are lots of people doing this. Michelle McDonald, another shout out to a woman out there who's, you know, she's smashing it. And you don't have to crush it in the weight room to, you know, be a stronger person. And if you're somebody who's doing nothing, then doing something is the big deal. And from a patient perspective, you know, the barriers are, you know, I don't need to tell any of you folks, right? You know, Spencer, you must see people who, you know, the concept of doing something like this is, it's tough, right? And for those folks, you know, it's all about making them feel comfortable at doing so. Like I say to kinesiology students. I'm like, tomorrow you're going to smoke a pack a day and go to McDonald's and lay on the couch. And they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, well, so that's the reaction that a lot of people who don't exercise have to being told you need to exercise. And they're like, oh, I never thought about that. But, you know, sometimes you got to put the shoe on the other foot. So, you know, all we're trying to do is to help people make it. And not everybody has the same goal as a lot of people on Instagram who are, you know, like optimization. And that's fine. It's great. It's a very worthy goal, but it's not everybody's goal.
Yeah. Lowering the barriers is what we're always trying to do. Like so many patients think of exercise as punishment, especially they had a bad experience lifting weights. They got annihilated by some, you know, personal trainer of some sort, and they're so sore they never wanted to do it again. So I think
this is a good little position
stand. What are some other
that might be a good segue into? I mean, I'm looking at table six right now, and it talks about resistance training prescriptions to improve muscle function and hypertrophy. And you go down the side where, you know, it has strength, hypertrophy, power, muscular endurance, gait speed, and all these other variables you looked at, and you talked about basically what the conclusions were from like the trials, and then essentially treatment like resistance training to enhance adaptation. And you have the real kind of the fundamental basics over there that I think can be helpful for people to, you know, to take from this and say, you know, kind of like, you know, you talk about 2 to 3 sets per session for strength. That's not overwhelming to people. And I think this kind of goes back to Brad Schoenfeld. I use some of his little infographics when I give talks to other doctors. When, you know, he's had some stuff for, you know, when you don't have much time and on and all these things. Yeah. And, you know, really, it really gets back to the evidence-based fundamentals that work, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming for people.
Yeah. And I mean, I sympathize, if that's the right word, with, you know, and we talked a little bit about this ahead of the show is, you know, you post this on LinkedIn and the conversation's very polite and very gracious. And, it's nice. It's a feel good moment, right? Most people thumbs up, heart, you know, great, amazing. Good to see this. You post it on Instagram and you get a little bit of pushback. Generally people are, I would say, pretty interested and excited and are they into it. A few people, like, you know, we say the periodization, and this is an important distinction. So we say that there wasn't enough evidence to show that periodization was superior to non-periodized programs. There were 6 reviewers for this stand, which is a lot more than you usually get for the average paper. So we had to work with 6 different individuals, and 2 or 3 individuals were like, is it periodization or is it programming? And we admit in there, sometimes that gets confused. And so we acknowledge that. It doesn't mean that periodization is not useful. And I'm sure the art of the science of prescribing exercise to periodize somebody's program so that they peak at a certain time, so that they don't get, you know, fatigue, they don't get overuse and everything, you know, all of these things, all the things that, you know, the a lot of the personal trainers and strength coaches will be like, dude, we knew that, you know, and we'll get onto that. But we couldn't find the evidence to show that it was different. And so it's not like we're using other people's evidence to give you an evidence-informed conclusion. So, I mean, in essence, we're just the messenger.
Yes.
Because
don't
we're
shoot the messenger.
Yeah. The reviews that other people have done. Yeah. So it's their fault, not ours. And everybody in the comment is like, periodization is super important. And I'm like, you're probably right, but not according to our review of systematic reviews. So, you know, our review of other people's reviews. Yeah. And I'm like, in your hands, I'm sure you know, past life as a personal trainer and team trainer for lots of, you know, sports. Of course we periodize programs. I mean, I don't know if it's that much better, but for a lot of people, it really works.
Is that even really the target people of this state? I mean, because it talks about healthy adults. And so to me, this really is my patients, and my patients don't need to, I wouldn't even think about periodizing.
Describe what periodizing is, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so periodization is essentially blocking training and sort of changing the stimulus so that at a certain point you're building up and maybe then you're really pushing somebody and then you kind of back off. And at a certain point, you're aiming to peak in terms of strength or physique or whatever it is. And bodybuilders have this down to an art. But if you're a power lifter, you know, you're not crushing it the week before you compete, right? So you want to be able to sort of peak for a certain event or whatever it is that you have in mind. Whereas mere mortals are going into the gym, like I'm not interested in periodizing anything. I just, you know, it's
same
like
here.
Lift today, get a good hard workout in, feel like you've done something, sleep better that night. And then 2 days later, do it again, but don't lift so hard that I hurt the next day. So that 3 days later, I'm still like, I can't lift. Like, I can't do it because it hurts too much.
Some of us old school meatheads like being sore the next day. But
yeah, you know, soreness is fine. I don't have an issue with soreness. Yeah. Like, there's a feeling that comes with lifting, right? Yeah. That afterwards you're like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a good workout. And I don't have an issue with that. But for a lot of people, you know, Spencer said it, you know, you get with one personal trainer and they're like, no pain, no gain.
Yep.
And a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know, no pain, no pain.
Yeah.
And pain is a, you know, it's like, I had one woman, we've got a big study going in perimenopausal women right now. And it's been eye-opening to talk to some of these women who, you know, plenty of them have said, I've tried this before and I'll give you one chance, literally, because last time this guy, he killed me. And I'm like, yeah, we're not about killing you. What we're about actually helping you hopefully enjoy this so that you come back and do it again. So, you know, if you've had a poor experience or you've tried it or one woman said, she said, you know, I used to lift weights, but it made me so tired. And she goes, now I can't sleep at all. I'm really hoping it has the same effect. And I'm like, well, I can't guarantee that either. But, you know, I hope that maybe something like that happens. But I mean, you know, so people lift for different reasons. Some people, it's a, there's a change in my body. Other people, they know it's a good thing for them. Patients on GLP-1s, which we talked about before. And I think, Spencer, I read your case studies with Grant. It shows what you can do, right? And I mean, people are surprised, I think, when you do something and you do it relatively hard, not drop down, like peel you off the floor, CrossFit, high rocks.
Putting in effort.
There's anything wrong with that either. But, you know, you work pretty hard and you do it consistently. And man, you know, people change pretty quickly and they're pretty impressed with what I think that they're able to do.
Yeah. I love it.
So can we go through some of those, just the real simple kind of, I guess essentially the recommendations, you know, almost like how to even sort of develop your own strength training program, at least some of those definitions, like sessions per week, percent of one rep max for each of these things.
Sure. So, I mean, let's start out with the basics. You know, definitely one time per week, massively better than zero times per week.
Perfect.
That's a big one, right? Two times per week, better than one time per week. Three times per week, like better than two, but not so much that I would be like, yeah, you got to do three. Like you're getting a lot of, you know, you're squeezing a lot of the water out of the cloth with two sessions a week. So twice a week. Maybe it's a Tuesday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Friday, Monday, whatever you want, or you've got a day on the weekend, something like that.
I have a question for that, though. So when you say that, I just want to make sure people are clear. When you say, you know, one or two times per week or three times per week, you're talking essentially about each muscle, or what I tend to tell patients are muscle movement groups. to some degree, right? I mean, can you help clarify that?
Yeah, so there's like 100 different variables we could change. This is the complicated part about doing this, but I'm, you know, boiling it down pretty simply. So you can do it as like you're going to work all your muscles in one workout, and then you're sort of going to do the same workout again, which is one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And or, you know, in one workout, you do your upper body. So it's all pushing, pulling, arms, you know, above your shoulders, that sort of thing. And then you work your legs. And so that's one form of split, upper and lower. Mm-hmm. Or there's a push-pull workout and then a legs workout. You know, you can split it lots of different ways.
Yeah. And I just wanted to clarify that for the people. Yeah.
But it's dependent on your goals, mm-hmm. how much time you have, and all kinds of things. So,
and if you'd like to do it. Right. I mean, kind of like when we were, you know, especially when I was done wrestling in college and I was just in med school, I like to lift weights. So I kind of did the meathead 6 day a week, a push day, a pull day, and a leg day, and a push day, and a pull day, and a leg day. But some people just want to do two full body days, get it in, and do other stuff on the other days. Right. Okay.
And there's so much benefit associated with that. Right. So the simplest thing is to, you know, this is a push. You can do it laying on your back, classical bench press. You can do it sitting. And this is another push activity right here. Grab on something and pull. Grab on something up here and pull. That's a pull activity. And then this is a, you know, that's a leg activity. Then you've got to do something where you're pulling a weight and you're pulling with your hamstring, and you do something with your calves. You know, so this is the classical squat and what we call a hip hinge. Which is really important for daily activities. And, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 exercises, maybe 5.
Yeah.
And you've got the big muscles pretty much covered. And, you know, I know then everybody goes, what about my biceps and triceps? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, you're pulling. So those work in you. And they go, but I want big biceps. You go, well, do some curls, you know, do some push downs.
Right? Yeah.
So the ideal workout is I've, you know, tried to get captured in the post is the one you'll do and the one you'll come back to, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's, you know, maybe I don't enjoy this that much, maybe I've only got 20 minutes, you can get what I've just told you done in under 20 minutes.
Yep.
And we do one set of each. So that's the, you know, floor level minimum buy in, and everybody goes, how many reps? And I'm like, okay, we're getting a little bit more granular here. And I'm like, it probably doesn't matter as much as people tell you. If you want to finish sooner, lift something heavy that takes it. So on the fifth repetition, you're like, you know, you're pulling down a bar on a machine. So it's a pull down, and you're like, that's hard. Like if I let this go and I try and do a 6th, I probably can't get the bar all the way down to my chest again. Then stop at 5 or stop at 4. You'll probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody goes, you're leaving one rep in the tank. That's an effective rep. And
it's
I'm
a
like,
failure,
dude, you know, because it's a guy telling me this or whatever. And I'm like, you know, if you need to squeeze that little last, it's, you know, like is the lemon worth the squeeze, right? And I'm like, if you care about it, then you're probably sort of a more advanced person. This is a mere mortal who we're trying to get back in the gym, right?
Yep.
Or maybe you lift something that you can lift, and on the, you know, the 9th repetition out of 10 or 11 that you can do, and it takes a little bit of time to feel where that is. Yeah. You need to get used to it. And I know everybody goes, well, people have a hard time estimating that. And I'm like, we have 500 people down in this community gym that we run down the 2 floors down here, and they all do it that way. It takes about 2 to 3, I would say maybe 4 weeks for them to feel where that fatigue is. And now we're talking people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, some of them, and some of them who have been with us, and they're in their 90s. And I don't think they struggle looking at a rating of perceived exertion scale and understanding where that last rep is. It takes a little bit of skill, but it's not hard. And then people saying, how many times do I have to do that? And I'm like, how much time are you willing to spend in the gym? And they go, well, I'll give you 30 minutes. And I'm like, do it twice, 2 sets. So, and they're like, and how long do I rest between sets? And I'm like, rest so that you finish your workout inside of 30 minutes. And they're like, you mean it doesn't have to be 90 seconds? And I'm like, I don't know, if you can finish it, you know, like it's all the things that are important. And people go, are shorter rests better? And I'm like, yeah, no, not really. Actually, it's better if you let yourself recover and everything. But then you got to spend a lot of time on the gym and you're sitting around, you know, where's my phone, right? And because people can't sit and do nothing anymore.
I'm guilty. I said, you know, and now there's a sign there that says, don't sit on,
you know, on your phone. You're like, oh my God, where's, I can't just sit here and like, you know, like, hey, you know, man, look around. I mean, yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot of time in the gym I spent like in between sets, just looking down like this. And then I have my Walkman to give you the era in which I first, you know, so you had this great big like cassette player and with foam headphones, and that was, no, I wasn't that cool.
You know,
Spencer got in the way and shit.
So our dad, who of course, you know, we grew up lifting weights with, we'd go to the high school and lift weights.
He's a buff dude. Yeah.
And so, you know, our basic thing back in the 80s and 90s, we went, he'd pick me, I mean, Spencer is really young at this point, but you know, he'd pick me up Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We'd go to the high school and we'd basically do a pretty basic full body workout, bench press, shoulder press, pull ups, rows, leg stuff. And so he still does that. And I still kind of do I turned into doing more of like kind of that meathead split, but I'll do circuit training once in a while. But he goes to Planet Fitness and he does the circuit. So he really doesn't take much rest between sets because you know his rest for his chest is during his pull and then his legs and whatever and he gets so pissed at the people on their phones and I'm like oh my God, I do that too when I'm sitting there in my rest period. But then
your dad and I are kindred spirits because everything I do is a circuit now, because to me the number one variable is time. Like if I spend longer than 45 minutes in the gym, I'm just like, what the fuck? You know, like I got shit to do. So it's, as you say, like it's, you know, supersetting, it's a chest. And then I go immediately to a pull down and my chest is resting while I'm pulling, you know, and then, but then I'll go and do something, you know, leg wise, it's an extension or something like that. And so, people sit on equipment. I'm like, killing me.
Yeah. And I think the circuit training, you know, has some aerobic benefits. We used to get in fights with other people about that before. I'm like, boy, if you're getting your heart rate, I mean, that's just good for you. It may not be running wind sprints, but it's darn good for you.
No, you know what? If you work at it and you go hard and you take it and literally no rest, at the end of the third circuit, if you're doing three, I can get my heart rate close to my max as if I'm doing a
you're gonna be tired.
Heck yeah.
So
What about how many times a week should you do that muscle group?
Yeah, so this sort of goes to the concept of what we call volume. And volume is, you know, number of reps times number of sets times number of sessions. And it seems that between 10 to 12 sets per muscle group, is where hypertrophy sort of, you know, kind of, I won't say it plateaus, but it definitely begins to, you know, you get diminishing returns. And again, if this is for most mere mortals. And so I know that there's another meta-analysis out there which shows that you can keep going up to much, much higher sets. And, you know, so the number of sets per muscle group, you know, is in the sort of 20, 30, 40.
I didn't know that. It's
crazy.
Like what I did growing up, but nowadays,
but it's kind of like what I did too. Yeah. I spent, and my workout would take like just over 2 hours.
We used to hang out with my dad in the weight room for like probably darn near 2 hours. But I'll tell you, nowadays being grown up with kids and I want to go hang out with them, they're doing their workouts. If I have 15 minutes here at I'm lucky my clinic's in the gym, I'll go down and I'll probably do like a, you know, maybe it's just, hey, I'm going to get some chest in. And I do a few sets of like an incline chest press. I'll throw in some like lateral raises with it to get a little something extra. And I'm 10 minutes. I go hard. Don't get me wrong. And I feel good about I feel pretty good about it. It's, let's say it's three, four sets, very much in line with what I've kind of learned from some of your publications, actually.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we talked about Brad Schoenfeld earlier, and he's got a great paper. I think the title is like No Time to Lift.
Yes. That's,
question mark.
That's what I was talking about with the infographic I share when I give talks.
Yeah, he's got a great little infographic in there. And it really is the type of thing that you're talking about where, you know, I love exercise. I love lifting. And there are days where I'm like I've got 20 minutes. And a lot of people will be like, don't bother. Like, what? Why would you even? And I'm like, well, it's a lot better than nothing,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I don't have an excuse because there's a gym like 27 feet away from here, and I have one in my basement too, right? So, you know, that's, you just get in there and you do a few reps and you squeeze a couple of sets in and you just do some basic movements, and yeah, that's what that day is. Or you're traveling and the hotel gym is,
yep,
you know, like a broom closet or something like that, and you're like, oh, it's all I got. So there you go.
Yep.
Perfect. Sounds like what we preach. Very good. What? All right. Anything else? What? Yeah, any other view on points,
things or?
Yeah. One of the things.
Myth busting. Anything? You know, like.
I don't know if it's myth busting as much, but I mean, one of the things that we did talk about is the development of power. Mm-hmm. And this is not something that I spend a lot of time focusing on, but myself and Ashley Kukowski, she's actually Canadian, but she's over at the University of Salford in the UK, wrote an article about, you know, power training in older people. And immediately everybody talks about sort of Olympic lifts. And I'm like, no. Lightweights, but move with an intentional velocity. Mm-hmm. And it really is about intent on the concentric. So you're going up and you're thinking about moving fast. It actually... The fast movement, yeah, it's good, but it's the intention to do it that is key. So that's the coaching cue, you know, move it with intention during the concentric phase. So you're pushing, and you're doing it with speed. So you do it with relatively light loads to master the form, or you get stronger first, and then you do this. And you know, power is developed with loads as low as 20% of your 1RM, so pretty light, up to maybe 70%. But you can't lift big heavy things super fast. And that's been one of the, I think, big things in the stand that's, you know, it's a little bit new. There's a little bit more information. Like, power is not just for power athletes, but one of the things that people lose as they get older is the ability to move and move quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So getting up and out of a chair, that's a power maneuver. Going up and down stairs, those are powered related maneuvers. You know, correcting yourself when you slip. I knew you guys grew up in Illinois, so you Michigan. Know when slipping on the ice.
Yeah.
Michigan.
Right? Michigan ice.
It's in the area.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's people in Florida are like, what's the slip thing, you know? So, but, you know, slippery surfaces or whatever. I mean, falls are a major, you know, watershed moment for older mm-hmm. people, right? So the point is the power training is probably associated with mobility issues more so than strength. And it's not that you don't develop power when you develop strength, you do, but if you're trying to optimize power, it's sort of a sweet spot between lighter weights and faster velocity.
And you mentioned eccentric for hypertrophy in your paper as well.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people, I think, are a little bit confused by that. It's the evidence that comes out eccentrically biased. So the lowering phase of lifts where, you know, the muscle is actually getting longer. So you're lowering a bar. You're essentially allowing the bar to pull. If you're doing instead of a pull down, it's sort of like a resisting the pull up. They tend to accentuate for a short period of time muscle growth. It is a little bit better with the eccentrically biased lifting. Doesn't mean that the stand didn't say because it's good, do that all the time. You can't do it all the time. It gets a tremendous amount of stress on your connective tissue as well. Yeah, it you know, lengthened partials are, you know, the big thing these days. And so in other words, you know, you pick a really heavy weight, you can only do a partial repetition instead of a full, say, curl or something. So you do this, and the idea is, and you know, these are the sorts of things that advanced lifters use. It comes up in the literature as being advantageous for growth, but it's not like the stand says, do this and do this all the time.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you know, we just highlighted evidence. And so, but it's come up and other people like, but what about the DOMS? And I'm like, yeah, it's, that's not good. Right. But you know, if you do something once, it hurts. And the second time, even like a week later, man, it hurts a whole lot less. But if you keep doing eccentrically biased exercise, it'll rip you up. There's no question about that. But it does come up in the stand as being slightly better for muscle growth.
When you say that, though, when you say it's biased, so, I mean, you're talking about what I guess I used to call negative.
Lower.
The negative part,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But how, you know, and I, you know, they used to talk about time under tension, and I almost thought that in this thing, that whole thing maybe isn't as big of a deal.
Tension. Yeah. Time under tension. Really, there's nothing evidence wise that we could pull out that longer or shorter times under tension matter. So, yeah.
But kind of plays in that whole.
It is a negative. It is a negative. So it's load up the bar and then lower it onto your chest, and you couldn't push it off your chest. You have to get, you know, your spotter buddy or buddies, help you with the bar off. So
is that what you mean by eccentric? So a true negative where it's too heavy to do it concentric, as opposed to just
exactly
because, you know, you'll hear people when you talk about teaching how to lift weights, you know, a little bit slower on the eccentric and then a concentric, maybe even an explosive one. You're talking about literally what I used to call negatives, where it's too heavy to do, but you're slowly bringing it down. Yeah. Okay.
It's and that's eccentrically biased versus regular eccentric concentric. The difference is small, but it does come up in the systematic reviews as being just that little bit better. You investigate it, you report the evidence, that's what it shows.
And that would be, I'll just say, more for athletes. If any of my patients are listening, you don't need to do that.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, I got to do this eccentric stuff. And I'm like, oh, it's going to hurt, right? I mean, and there are times for athletes to do that. I mean, that's, or if you're a power lifter and it's about, bench press, deadlift, squat, then there are some times where you're going to overload it to the point where you're going to lower a weight that's heavier than what you're going to try and lift in an effort to sort of, try and boost that last little part. And it's more of an optimization strategy than it is a fundamental strategy for sure.
Love it. What else? Spence, anything else? Are we good? Are we good?
Be some other stuff. Blood flow restriction
that's sort
stuff
of it,
that you hear
right?
about?
You kind of, you boil a lot of this stuff down and everybody goes, like it was, 130,000 people. And I'm like, but the take home again is, first you got to do it. Right. Yes. And, phrase I was fond of using when I used to coach a lot of hockey and rugby players and everything. And I said, particularly younger guys, in high school, I'd be like, guys, there are two different types of guys that lift weights. And they're like, oh, what? I said, there are guys who lift weights and there are guys who talk about lifting
weights.
That's
what we were, that's Spencer's meme about us.
That's funny.
So I'm like, I said, so try and be one of the guys that lifts weights, as opposed to a lot of talk. And, even guys who are like, coach, like and I'm like, be consistent. I said, you will be amazed. And even Lane Norton says this. He goes, you will be amazed at what the transformation will bring, right? And I think, I can't say it any simpler than that. And I mean, hopefully haven't upset too many people. Although, like I said, LinkedIn, hey, it's great. Instagram, pretty good. X, it's a storm of hate. We already knew this.
Hope you didn't put it on Threads. God, that's great.
No, I wouldn't.
Threads can be good.
And I definitely would stay off of TikTok as well because,
God, TikTok. Yeah. So what about the, I think you guys got into some of the blood flow restriction stuff.
I've never done that, but I am
interested in.
Because I needed to do very light loads. And when I get the tendinopathy in something, so then once it's healed, I go back to normal.
What's the deal with that?
you know, there's a lot of people that talk about BFR. To me, it's always going to be a bit of a niche form of exercise. I'm not saying it doesn't work, but in the on balance, when we looked at it, it's not like there's some strategic advantage to doing it versus lifting weights, right? And I mean, to be clear, blood flow restriction is, you know, you can put something around the top of your arm, you can put something around the top of your leg. Like, there's no way to constrict your chest or your back, or, you know, if I said to people, I'm like, what about neck strengthening? And they're like, well, I was like, yeah, you don't want to do that.
None of that actually sounds that great to me. It'd be like the ultimate warrior, tying things around your arms.
There are people who, you know, this is their thing, right? And yeah, there's you go to the American College of Sports Medicine meeting, there's a blood flow restriction special interest group.
Wow.
Okay. Very cool. Well, informative as always. We'll have to get you back on and talk more about some protein stuff in the future, but thanks for coming on.
We'll pause on that because we're going to knock you over with a couple of big studies. Maybe have me on at the end of the year. We got a couple of good ones.
Oh boy. I cannot wait for that. We're going to hold you to that. So anybody, friends and family, want to learn about lifting and what actually matters, share this podcast with them. Give us a good rating on Spotify and Apple or wherever the heck you're listening this to. And follow Dr. Phillips on wherever, X, Instagram, I don't know, Facebook.
X, Instagram, somewhere. Same handle.
And Matt especially Kessler. TikTok.
And I'm on TikTok to really, you know, grate my youngest son who says that old people shouldn't be on TikTok. Uh-huh. So I got on there just basically to piss him off.
Good. Very good.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.